Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Hey, this is Jay Weinberg from Slipknot, and you're listening to Metal Up, your podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up, your podcast. I'm Ethan Luck, and this is just a short and sweet intro. Clint is still in the UK, and I went ahead and took care of Metal Tales for Paris. And a huge thanks to Miguel Aguiar for joining me all the way from London. He went to both Paris shows, and apologies to Z, the other patron that was going to take care of one of the nights. We'll get back to you another point. As usual, you can find us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, blah, blah, blah. Easiest way to get hold of us is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. I'm going to go ahead and forego the emails this week just because I think it's a lot better when it's me and Clint, you know, riffing on what you guys send in. So I had some pulled down to read today, but it's just not the same when I'm by myself. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, next week we are actually going to have a special guest host, Mr. Brad Blazik. We're going to be doing Explore the Big Four. I'm not going to tell you what record we're doing yet, but I'm sure a lot of fans of this band will be really excited. It is considered a classic album. And I thank Brad again for stepping in while Clinton is on the road in the UK with Morgan Wade. Anyways, I think it's time to get to the interview with Miguel. We had a good time chatting. Miguel has seen over 25 Metallica shows. He's got an I Disappear ticket for this tour and gives us his rundown of the Paris shows. So check out this Patreon commercial and we'll get to Miguel. I hope you guys enjoy it and we'll say peace and adios.
Hey everyone, Clint and Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to SNM2 and Slane Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these.
Ah, Nuprin. Little. Yellow. Different.
Welcome to another episode of Metal Tales from the Road. This is Ethan Luck, and I am on vacation currently and holed up in my friend's basement, which is actually an old church she lives in, which is pretty awesome. And all the way, not based in London, based in Lisbon, but in London right now, we're going to be talking to Miguel Aguiar. And we're chatting about Paris Night 1 and 2. How you doing, Miguel?
Great, great. After the second show, I'm still great. I'm still very happy.
And these were the first two shows you saw on the M72 tour?
No, I saw the Amsterdam ones. I bought I Disappear tickets. So
oh, there it is.
For Europe, just for Europe. But yeah, I'm going to see all the European shows this year.
Oh, man, that is so cool. Well, obviously, we're going to get into these two Paris shows, and that's amazing that you're going to get to, you know, have the time even to go see all these shows. But what I'd love to do is for all of our listeners to get to know you a little bit. This is your first time on Metal Tales, and we're very thankful for you being a patron and coming on the show. And we'd love just to hear your backstory on Metallica, when you came online, you know, first record you heard, maybe favorite record now, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll get into the show.
Basically, I got into Metallica. The first time I heard about them was when they played in Lisbon in 93. But basically, I was 8 years old. Obviously, I couldn't go to the concert. But I have a memory of, like, in a judo locker room, you know, after training, there were some guys listening to Metallica, and I remember them, like, talking about the upcoming concert in Lisbon. And that's basically my first memory. But then in the Load era, you know, my brother had the CD. It wasn't mine, but basically I got a tape with the Load record, copy, you know, from the CD. And they still play in Lisbon. I couldn't go there yet, you know, because my parents didn't allow it. But I remember, like, and a cousin of mine was already talking a lot about Metallica and started to play guitar. And then when Reload came out, it was like the first record that I bought for me. So I'm more or less like linked, you know, the Reload record was like really important for me.
That's cool.
And from then, I've become like a major fan with Reload. And since then, you know, the first gig I saw was Garage Inc. European Tour in the summer of 99 in Lisbon.
Oh, very cool.
And after that, I saw them quite a few times.
How many times have you seen the band at this point?
I think it's like 26 or 7 with these two in Paris, yeah. And
that number is going to jump pretty quickly here after the European show.
It should be 31 after these European tours.
Oh, that's so awesome, man. Well, man, what a cool era to get into the band, too. I mean, because for a lot of people like me who got into them earlier, that was kind of a weird time. And, you know, I was just getting into other stuff. And so I kind of went, I guess, not went offline with Metallica, but definitely, I think, overlooked, you know, those two records minus the singles. But obviously with the podcast and over the years, I love those albums now. So you were in a place where you didn't grow up listening to the early stuff.
Because at this Paris show, a friend of mine from Lisbon also came to Paris for the shows. And he was telling me, like, about when it was, like, in 85, 86, a friend showed him Ride the Lightning. I was like, whoa, what is this? You know, like, super. And then he went to the store to buy Ride the Lightning, and they said, oh, we don't have it, but we have this new one, Master of Puppets. So he bought that one, and he went home, listened to it, and was like, super, whoa, you know, again. So I understand that for someone who started listening in the 80s, it's the Load, Reload was a bit different, you know. So
sure, yeah, but I'd imagine having already gotten into like Load and Reload, and then all of a sudden hearing Master of Puppets was a mind blowing experience.
It was. Yeah, actually, I after Reload, also Garage Inc. Because I remember I went to the store the same day it went out. A cousin of mine gave me a copy of the live sheet, Binge and Purge, you know, all the concerts. So that was like the Mexico.
Yeah.
Recording was like mind blowing for me. You know?
Man, that is so cool. And is your brother still a fan of the band?
My brother, no, but my cousin is.
Oh, okay.
My cousin, my brother had the Load CD, but he never became like a super fan. He likes stuff, but he's not a super fan. My cousin is really,
yeah.
He's still really into Metallica.
Is your cousin able to go to any of these shows on the tour?
No. Basically, if they go to Portugal, he normally goes, but he doesn't travel.
Okay, so it's clear at this point in your life that you're the biggest Metallica fan in the family.
true.
Especially if you're buying the I Disappear ticket to get to see all these shows.
I felt like I had to do it once in my lifetime to see all the shows.
Well, absolutely, man. And also, you know, Clint and I have talked about this on the show a few times that, you know, that obviously the guys in the band aren't getting any younger.
Yeah.
And, of course, in the press they could say, oh, yeah, we got another two records in us, or we're going to do this for 20 more years. But it's like sometimes, you know, your body disagrees with you, and you know, so a lot of us are kind of going into this tour, into this album, thinking like, well, if this is the last run, you know, you just never know. So I think you made the right call by getting the I Disappear ticket and living this good life of being a Metallica fan and getting to see all these shows, and that's an experience that you'll never forget. Obviously,
when they announced the tour, I was like, this might be one of the last opportunities. And with the double nights, different set lists, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it this year, the I Disappear.
Yeah. And after seeing four shows, do you already feel that it's worth it?
Yeah. The stage is really cool. You know, the different set list, I wasn't sure if they would change any songs from Amsterdam to the Paris shows, but they did, you know. So
yeah.
I think they switched like three or four, and yeah, it has been really worth it until now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're also, I've noticed, you know, they're also reordering things a lot too. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
certain songs have to stay towards the end, like Puppets and Sandman and One.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the details of the set list shortly, but it is cool to see the set list changing a little bit.
Yeah.
We were all kind of curious going into the Paris shows, like, how different it's going to be, what other songs are they going to pull out. And there was a couple surprises, I thought. You know, maybe not exactly like as drastic as some people were expecting, but there's some cool stuff which we'll get into here shortly. So going to these shows, are you just doing this solo just by yourself, or are you going with a friend or anything?
Mostly solo, yeah. For the Paris shows, a friend of mine from Lisbon also came, but the other ones I'll be on my own. But I mean, you easily meet some other people that
travel. Oh yeah,
actually in Amsterdam I was also with two friends from Lisbon that also went.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So you're able to at least meet up with people at the show. And, you know, we all have gotten to know and love the Metallica community to where you can just show up to any gig and make friends with somebody fast.
Brother.
But that's also an exciting thing to do by yourself, too. It's like this pilgrimage, this Metallica pilgrimage that you're on this journey, just experiencing this I Disappear ticket just on your own. I don't know. It's just one of those things that... It's almost like when people decide to go, you know, go on a month-long backpacking trip or something, hiking through the mountains and stuff like that. But yours, instead of a mountain, it's Metallica.
I mean, it's awesome, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Since you came online with Reload, do you still feel the same way about that era of Metallica as you did when you first got into it?
Yeah, because I basically started playing guitar with Load, you know. I still know how to play a lot of those songs.
Yeah.
I was living, I don't know if you remember, but you were here in London in 2019. You did a meetup with the Metal of Your Podcast community.
Right.
Yeah, I was there.
That's right, at Brewdog.
And with the pandemic, I got back to Lisbon.
Yeah.
And basically, I rented a small room to play, you know, with a friend of mine. And basically we go there, we do a lot of jams, but we still play a lot of Metallica songs because me and my friend that rents the space with me, we grew up listening and playing Load and Reload songs, you know. So it's still like one of my favorite records, you know, both of them. And
yeah, that's awesome, man. It seems like whatever album, for any band really, whatever album you become a fan on, that album usually will stick with you forever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was, you know, kind of Justice Black Album, mostly Black Album, because that was like the first new record at the time for me. And that record still, I mean, some people will put it on and skip Enter Sandman because that's like one of their most played songs and stuff like that. But when I put the Black Album on the turntable at home, I mean, I'd still listen to it front to back, no matter what.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the beginning of Sandman, the second those drums come in, it just rumbles my speaker.
Yeah, the sound is like so,
Exactly, man. Yeah. That's awesome. And, dude, and again, thank you for meeting up back in 2019. I think that was September in London. That was
September, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really fun night. Were you still there that night when the homeless woman stole my beer?
Yeah. at the Brewdog pub. Yeah.
Exactly. Brewdog's a great spot, which they're actually, they carry a lot of Brewdog beer in the States now, which is cool. But yeah, I can't remember. I'm sure I talked about it on the show, but yeah, just a quick little recap was we're just sitting there hanging out, and I had just gotten a full pint of beer, and we're all chatting, having a good time. And I just see someone in the corner of my eye just reach over and grab my beer, and I turn around, and this woman just starts downing it. Doesn't even walk away, just right in front of me. And I was so taken back by it. I was like, and I went to grab it, and she almost finished the whole thing. I grabbed it, set it back down, and she just walked off like we were old friends.
Yeah.
Like,
goodbye. See you next time.
That will always be such a vivid memory of that night. It was pretty unbelievable. Well, dude, so what are your, now that it's been out for, I think at this point, maybe 5 to 6 weeks, what are your thoughts and feelings about 72 Seasons?
I really enjoyed it. You know, probably my favorite tracks, 72 Seasons and Inamorato, I think are the favorite ones. But honestly, I really like the album.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. For example, You Must Burn on the record is good, but I prefer the live version, you know?
Yeah.
But honestly, I enjoyed, like, most of the entire record, you know? It's, like, strong record, the voice is great, the sound is great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of great riffs, different stuff, you know. I think they tried, for example, the Screaming Suicide verse melodies, really original, some really cool parts, some cool riffs there. I think it's one of the last tracks that... I can't remember the name now because with all this traveling, Lawrence, I haven't been listening
sure.
so much to it, but there are two tracks with the guitar harmonies, you know.
The harmonies. Oh, yeah. Well, they do that on Room of Mirrors.
I think it's Room of Mirrors. For me, it has like a bit of a punk vibe, which I also love, you know, on that song.
Yeah.
You know, during the verses, the riff and... The drum is like really punk vibe, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's that kind of it's not a blast beat. Sometimes people confuse a blast beat with more of like the punk fast metal beat.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that kind of beat that Lars did a lot, and obviously in the early days of a lot of the thrash stuff. And this really is, I feel, and me and Clint and Paul have talked about it, how it is very much like a thrash record. You know, and then there's these moments where you can hear glimpses of Load and Reload or the Black Album, and there's even a couple parts that I hear Death Magnetic a little bit. But
yes,
I'm just so excited that they're, you know, at their age, they're still putting out.
They are
record.
Six, you know.
Right? It's like you know, I've said this before, where it's like it's so hard to name any other bands that are still as active as Metallica and relevant and selling out stadiums and arenas that are putting out good quality music. It's just exciting as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, and Saint Anger is like, there are still some good songs, but it's the record I listen the least, you know. It's
same.
I mean,
no shame.
I still love a few songs, but all the records, I think they are great on their own way, you know. I love Death Magnetic, Hardwired also.
I think every record kind of stands on its own, it's tough to. Well, I should say it this way. It's easy to compare, let's say, 72 Seasons to Hardwired or Death Magnetic or whatever. That's our gut says, oh, well, I like this better than Hardwired, or I like this less than Death Magnetic. But really, when you dissect it, it's like this, they each have to be their own thing.
Yes.
You know, it's like when you see the comments online of someone's like, ugh, it's not Ride the Lightning, so I think it sucks. It's like, well, you're hitting play on however you listen to the record. And immediately you've got this idea in your head that like it better sound
You have an expectation, and if it's not met, you know, it's like, oh, I don't like it. You know?
Right.
But I think it's a dumb way to appreciate music, you know.
It absolutely is. You're totally right on that, man. And then, you know, there's a lot of bands out there that they veer off from their original sound. And, you know, U2 did it in the 90s. You know, the Beatles, notoriously did it. And, you know, I like all the Beatles stuff, but like their later stuff is my favorite, you know. Maybe it would be different if I was a teenager in the 60s or something and hearing that for the first time. But yeah, Metallica is definitely one of those bands that, you know, you just got to take every record for what it is and kind of absorb it that way. And then over time, you could, you know, now as a 44-year-old person, I can say, oh, I actually like Master of Puppets better than Ride the Lightning. And in no way does that mean I don't like Ride the Lightning, because it's...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, it's impossible to choose or say that I like...
Right.
I mean, I can choose a favorite, you know, of all the albums.
Yeah, it's like choosing a favorite child sometimes, you know, like...
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just one of the fun things about being a Metallica fan, is that everyone kind of has their place in the era that they came online and the era that they gravitate towards, you know. And a lot of times for me, it is the older stuff. But, I mean, 72 Seasons and Hardwired and Death Magnetic alone, it's like those stand up to anything, in my opinion. And it's just so exciting as a Metallica fan just to sit back and be like, geez, like this band that I got into when I was 11 years old or whatever, 12 years old,
they're still
there, and they're still making music that's worth listening to, you know. So how long have you been playing playing guitar? You mentioned you're a guitar player.
Since 97, more or less. The Reload album in 96, I started playing, but more, I mean, I saw an improvement in 97,
right?
98,
So were you in bands and stuff back then, or have you always been a casual at home player?
I play with this friend of mine, he plays drums, you know, so we always played together.
And
when I was living in Madrid for a while, I had like a blues band, you know, because I mean, it's Metallica fan, but I also listen to a lot of like blues, bit of jazz, funk, soul.
Yeah. I got two questions for you regarding the blues, because I'm not like a massive blues fan. I like a lot of it, but I don't go super deep. But are you familiar with Freddie King?
Yes.
Yeah. He's one of the baddest dudes out there, man. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know the Either Way song, you know?
Yeah.
The instrumental. There's a part that sounds like metal, you know?
right.
I learned the song because I was having lessons in Madrid while I was living there with the blues guitar player.
Yeah.
And he taught me, like, all the licks from that song. And I was like, check out this part. You know, you like metal and Metallica. This sounds like heavy metal.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
He's one of the great, great guitar players.
Yeah, totally. And I guess my other question was, is blues music popular in Lisbon?
No, not so much in Lisbon.
No?
In Madrid, honestly, there's, like, a big blues scene, you know, and really good blues musicians. But in Lisbon, it's, like, a very, like, there are a few spots where you can see... But it's very, I mean, nowadays with the internet, maybe there are more blues fans than like 20 years ago, you know. But
right.
But still, it's not a very famous genre. You know?
Yeah, I know that the couple times that I've been to Lisbon, which is a beautiful city, by the way, I loved walking around that city. It was awesome. Yeah, at no point did I walk around and hear any blues bands playing.
No. I mean, jazz is a bit more popular now.
Yeah.
There are jazz schools and there's a bit of more clubs where you can see jazz musicians playing, but blues is like it's a bit smaller, the blues scene in Lisbon.
Okay. Yeah, and I think in general, I mean, even in the States, you know, there's certain cities that are way more blues cities that are known for it, like Chicago, you know, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot, you hear that kind of stuff, like obviously Memphis, that's huge in Memphis. You know,
yeah.
All of Beale Street is just nothing but blues bars. Yeah. If you're ever in the States,
I want to go there.
Yeah, you should.
I'm trying to plan like a U.S. trip with a few visits to cities with music history. You know.
Well, I mean, if you come to Tennessee, I mean, you've got two major ones right there, blues and country. And the cool thing about Nashville is that there's so much more than that now, you know, but obviously if you're coming for the history of it, you know, look no further than Nashville for country, and then it's only about a three hour drive to Memphis.
To Memphis.
Unfortunately, we don't have a good rail system in the state, so you can't just take a train down to Memphis. But I wish you could, because that would be a lot easier. But yeah, Memphis is a great town for blues, and like honestly, almost every bar pub you walk into down there on Beale Street, you're going to hear amazing musicians. The same as you would in Nashville. Now, a lot of what Broadway has become is this huge tourist trap and party scene now. Like, you know, it's bachelorette parties all come there and tourists from all over the world come there. And it seems like they all come down there just to absolutely get annihilated from drinking. And a lot of the bars now, it's just kind of top 40 cover bands. So you'll go down there. Some bars you'll hear country music and stuff like that. A lot of the older bars, you still used to hear that. But a lot of these newer bars, you mainly are hearing people just doing, like, you know, top 40 from any decade. So you'll hear Journey, you know, or you might hear Carrie Underwood or whatever, but there is some good spots. If you ever come to Nashville, you have to let me know, and I can take you around, or if I'm not there, I can give you spots to go to for sure.
Okay.
Somebody who's like a music lover, and I feel like you're maybe a slight purist when it comes to like old music.
No, honestly.
Okay. I think I pegged you incorrectly then.
I like a lot of different genres, and I'm not like I like experimentation in music, you know, and innovation, you know.
Well, I would definitely send you to a couple spots that or I guess I should say are more like authentic, you know.
Yeah, but I also appreciate it, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's no shortage of live music in both of those cities, so anytime you come over, you got to let us know for sure.
I have to go now.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, before the pandemic, I was actually trying to go to Nashville, but...
Yeah.
Well, with the pandemic, I had to cancel the trip, and I haven't booked it yet.
The whole world was canceled, so...
Yeah, true.
So do you still get together with friends and jam a little bit?
With the friend that I rent the space with, every now and then we go there and jam.
Yeah.
We jam Metallica, and then we jam like Metallica does in the jam room.
Right, but yeah.
The difference is that we don't have Lars to basically listen to everything we record and edit it. But normally we do it like jams. We create it on the spot riffs, and it's quite fun. You know?
Are you guys like documenting any of it, like recording the riffs? And
Yeah, we record like with the
cool
external mics, and also I sometimes connect the... a mic to capture the drums, and also like from the pedal board direct out.
Yeah,
we can record everything. It's
That's
works
awesome.
Quite well.
Do you guys have a goal to create these songs and put out music? Come on, man.
More or less, yeah.
He just looked really shy when I asked him that.
No, the thing is, like, we record, but then we normally don't go home and listen to everything, and we don't do that part of the work. So basically, the plan is to do it, but we don't know when, you know, because
right.
Normally we are busy with work or with. I also do like a photography. I'm always getting photographs from
sure.
a few years ago, and you know,
yeah,
I'm always busy with work or with something else, and I haven't like applied the required time to
right.
Well, that's cool to do it, you know, properly. But
that's cool that you do photography too, because I do that as well. Yeah. And how long have you been shooting?
The first time I took a picture and I was like, "Whoa, I love this!" was at Death Magnetic presentation show was in Berlin.
Right.
I won a contest to the Warner Music. You know, they had like a contest in every country.
Right.
For I think it was like 10 people, and all the other people in the audience were like Met Club members that
yeah.
could buy the ticket. And basically, I was in the stands, and I took a picture with like the vulture of James and the light, you know. And
yeah,
it was like a really cool picture.
And that opened it up for you.
Yeah. After a while, basically, I bought like a DSLR camera and started shooting some shows, but.
Yeah,
I mean, I do mostly like concert photography, you know.
Yeah, well, it's a really fun thing to do. I mean,
I love.
My mom did photography for a long time, and so I kind of got that bug from her, and then got the music bug from my dad. I always had a camera on the road with me, whether it used to be an old film camera, which I still have. That same camera was a Canon AE-1, and then I remember my parents got me for my birthday one year my first digital camera. I think it was an Olympus.
The one I shot that picture to was also like an Olympus compact camera.
Oh, nice, nice.
My mom bought it. I think she went to Washington, D.C. for some.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I need a better camera because a friend of mine already had a DSLR. But she bought that one and I was like, oh, it's not a DSLR. But then I took that picture and I was like, okay, this is great, you know.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, getting into something like photography is very similar to discovering a band like Metallica. Like, once you take that first shot and you kind of get a good composition, good contrast of colors, whatever, and you see something you created, you're like, oh my gosh! And then it kind of hooks you, right? Similar to the first time you heard Reload, it's like, oh, there's something there, and I want to do this more.
Yeah,
you know? And it's an exciting thing for sure. And I mean, now here I am, you know, traveling on vacation, and I mean, look, I've got a GoPro right here with a battery grip. I've got a drone with me and other cameras. Like, it just kind of never ends. But I remember, speaking of concert photography, the first time I really started getting serious about photography was on the Vans Warped Tour in 2008. Mm-hmm. My old band was on it, and like I said, I had a camera with me on the road, so I was just always taking pictures and all that stuff. And it was that tour that I decided I'm going to go just walk around to different stages on the tour, because it's essentially a traveling festival. And and I had, you know, an all access pass because I was on the tour, and I would just go shoot bands that I really enjoyed. And so basically I would shoot the set, go back to our tour bus, and I would edit the photos. And then back then, I didn't have any thumb drives or anything like that. But I would burn the photos, edited photos, onto like a DVD-R.
Okay.
From my computer, and then I would put in a little sleeve, and I would write whatever band on it and the date. And then I would just go find the bands. I would see them in the catering area waiting in line for food, or backstage just hanging out having a beer, and I'd walk up and introduce myself and said, hey, I'm Ethan. I'm playing this band. I'm on the tour. I'm just shooting for fun. I shot your set today. Here's a DVD-R, which sounds so so archaic at this point. And every band was stoked. They're like, oh, this is awesome. Thanks so much. And I'm like, did you just do this for free? I'm like, I'm just trying to get better at shooting and get better at photographing, you know, live music. And I ended up making lifelong friends by doing that.
Nice.
So not only was I getting better at photography and specifically concert photography, but I was gaining friendships at the same time. So it really opened my world up, you know, to get into photography like that. So I assume you're still, you still actively shoot all the time then, if you said the editing photos gets in the way of making a record.
I never got any money from it. The only thing I got was like a guitar lessons with that guitar player in Madrid. You know, I shoot like a few photos for his records, and
yeah,
that was like the only professional, not paid in money, but with services.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Honestly, when I go to a show, I always bring a camera, whether it's like a compact camera with a good lens, you know, with the fast lens.
Yeah,
it's good enough for a show. Or if it's like a club, I can bring my normal cameras and
right.
and shoot. You know? And I still have like a huge backlog of photos to edit. You know, that's why I'm always doing it.
The important thing is you're staying creative, man.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I love like the feeling of taking the pictures and then capturing a great moment. You know.
Exactly that, and that is the key to good photography, is or at least live photography.
Yeah,
anybody could take a picture of the stage and, you know, the lights are doing whatever they're doing, but if you can capture those really good moments, like you got to think of some you know, iconic photos that have been taken over the years. You know, like there's that famous one of Eddie Vedder climb the scaffolding at a show and is hanging by one arm from it, and you see the mic, and then like that's one of those moments where it's like, oh my god, like that photographer was in the right place at the right time. And a lot of obviously professional photographers, touring photographers, they've got access to the whole stage. They can be wherever they want.
I mean, that's like a huge factor for taking good pictures, you know,
right.
in live music photography. But honestly, I enjoy like the fact of being limited to, for example, in this concert, I can't move, you know, I'm always in the same place.
Right.
But it's like a limitation that, on the other hand, makes you find a way to still take good pictures, you know?
And yeah, exactly.
It's like a limitation that makes you improve, you know? And,
mm-hmm. The nice thing, too, is that if you're at a show and it's a crowded show, or let's say you're in the Snake Pit at a Metallica show, and you can't really move much, the bonus is, you know, the band is moving.
Yeah,
the band is, you know, James is showing up really close to you, and then all of a sudden it's Robert Kirk, and obviously Lars is stationary depending on what drum kit he's on, all 17 of them on the tour. But, but you know, that's the nice thing is if you're confined to one space, you know, that's when you got to look for those great moments, you know, when the band does something cool, or the singer jumps up on a riser or raises his arm in the air or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. I feel like I found another brother in the creative world.
Yeah.
I do. I love meeting and talking with people that are musicians and also do photography too. It's, you know, because it's a common thing I've noticed for a lot of musicians to get into when they're touring, because there's a lot of downtime and you want to do something.
Yeah.
Have another creative outlet on the road. You know, obviously, you know, we'll do the podcast while we're on the road, but I still shoot a lot of photos and bring my SLR and a film camera and GoPros and all. I got this whole media backpack now.
Yeah.
You know, but well, dude, let's kind of talk about your I know you went to the Amsterdam shows, but let's kind of talk about your journey getting to the Paris shows and kind of fill us in on, because obviously it's a stadium show, it's massive, there's a lot of people. Fill us in on, you know, traveling to Paris, getting into the show, was it a hassle, did you go to the pop-up store, all that kind of stuff, and walk us through all that.
I arrived the day before the first show on the 16th, you know, that was a good day to go to the pop-up store, because after that, like, the queue is like 10 times bigger now on the other days, you know.
Oh, I'm sure.
So basically, I went on the first day. The pop-up is really nice, you know, a lot of different clothes and some patches, some different, like, there are like two skateboards, you know.
Yeah.
There are a lot of patches, like vinyl, CDs,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, it's really nice to go there and see. But I went there one time after the day before the first show, you know, and it was like much more filled with much more people, much more noise and confusion. But the store is really nice, you know, some cool T-shirts, some special items, you know. I think it's worth going there.
What did you end up buying there?
I bought a T-shirt for me and like a shirt for a friend of mine.
Yeah.
He wanted that shirt, but he couldn't buy it in the London pop-up stores.
Yeah, okay.
So I bought it.
When and if they do the pop-up stores in the States, if I can't get to one, I'm going to have to get somebody to get me one of those skateboard decks.
Yeah.
Because those are cool, because I love skateboarding still. So. That's cool, man.
But it might be easier to get them, you know. I don't think that. I mean, for example, the shirt that I bought from my friend was like almost sold out. And
right.
But the skateboard, I think they are.
Well, not a lot of people want to carry that around, you know, yeah. especially if they're like, if they're, you know, buying that there and then they're going straight to the show, are they going to let you in with a skateboard deck? If they do, you got to hold on to it for like 5 hours.
I mean, in Paris, they had like, I don't know how you say it, I'd say it in English, but it's like a place where you normally leave clothes or bags that you can't enter the stadium with.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of times over here, they'll call that like a coat check area, where you, if okay. you have a jacket or something you can leave, or a backpack yeah. or whatever. And some venues have lockers you can rent for $5 or something.
And this was free in Paris, and basically on the second show, I had to leave my backpack because I was going to the airport after the show.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
So,
man.
It was okay.
So how long did you have to wait in the line at the pop-up store?
The first day was like 2 minutes, you know. Oh, it was awesome. Like really short queue. But on the second day was, I mean, I don't know, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I passed on there on the day of the last show, and the queue was even bigger. And I was like, but I just went there to catch a train to the stadium.
Yeah.
But the queue was like enormous, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I saw some photos online.
If you can go on the first day that it opens, which is before the first show, the day before the first show.
Yeah.
I think it might be the best one to.
Yeah, that's the way to go, because you got to imagine, especially in Europe, where everyone can get to different cities a lot more easy than out here, because you know, taking trains and flights flights are a lot shorter over there, depending on where you're going. And I'd imagine that by the time the day of the first show happens, so thousands more people have gotten into town and are going to hit that pop up shop like you did. But yeah, all right. So take Miguel's advice. Go the day before the first show,
unless you have a lot of free time. But
right, yeah. So what was it like, you know, getting into the show? Was it intense security, or because I know some of these shows it could be kind of a debacle to get in.
On the first day was quite easy because I had to basically check in on the hotel, because on the first day I was in a different hotel, and then I had to move and I could only do the check-in at 3 o'clock. So basically when I arrived to the stadium, it was like really easy. With the ID disappear, you have to pick up a ticket for each show. I just went there. There was no queue there because all the other people had already the ID disappear package had already entered the stadium. And also, right. I just went there and went to the door. It was like a specific door. It was no queue there, and it was really easy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
On the second day, it was a bit more. Like, took a lot of. I think I arrived around one, but then we. There were people that basically the IDs appear as like an early entry.
Yeah.
But people that buy a ticket with early entry for a specific show, they have priority. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So it's like an early entry, and they enter before, but we basically both groups of early entry and the IDs appear early entry groups were already inside the stadium, but they still had to wait to get to the
right
the floor, you know. Mm-hmm. We were like, I think I was there for like 3 hours waiting for
wow
before to get the ticket, and then but I wanted to get a good spot. So
with the I disappear ticket, you're basically on the floor, right?
Yes, sir. And you have early entry.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For all shows.
Yeah, were you able to get up close, like close to the rail, or what was your plan? I should say, were you wanting to do that?
Yes. On the first show, I was like 6th, 7th row because I arrived around, I think I entered like 5:30.
Yeah.
On the first show, and I was like 6th, 7th row, more or less.
Okay.
On the second night, I was on the second row.
Awesome.
I mean, I might have been able to get like a front row, but I would be in the part of the stage that is higher. So
yeah.
I couldn't see as well.
Yeah.
So I prefer to be on the second row on the lowest part of the stage where you can see like all the stage, you know, you can always see them in.
Yeah. Cause that stage is massive.
If you're on the lowest part. Yes.
It's huge.
Like really,
I mean,
really big.
I'm sure it looks even bigger in person. So where you're standing, whether you're 6 people back or 2 people back, are there points in the show where you can't even see one of the guys?
No, you can always see them.
Okay.
From the lowest part, you can always see them. But in Amsterdam, I was in, on the first show, I was in a, like the highest part of the stage.
Yeah.
And you can only see them when they are there, you know.
Oh wow. So that there's some advice for everybody who's going to these shows who are gonna be on the floor.
the highest part of stage also has like the monitors and some lights that move like this, you know. And
right.
It still blocks a bit of the view, you know. So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, that's good to know. I mean, even for, you know, eventually I think I'm going to go to the St. Louis show. It would be this November. Yeah, good advice. Because if I end up getting close to the rail, like I need to, hit the small part of the stage or the lower part of the stage, according to McHale's advice. Were you able to, so you're obviously in early enough to check out the opening bands, right? So the first night was Epica, who covered for Five Finger Death Punch and Ice Nine Kills.
Yes.
How were those bands?
I had seen Ice Nine Kills in Amsterdam. It's okay, but I'm not like a big fan of the, you know, have you seen any videos of the performance of, you know?
Yeah, it's like very horror movie themed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it works that well on a huge stadium, but
yeah.
The music has some cool moments, but some of them not so good, you know. But it was okay. It was entertaining.
Yeah, for sure.
The second band, Epica, was better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Because basically I saw them in Hellfest the previous year.
Okay.
And that concert was like really boring, you know, for me. Like very power metal. But I mean, I assume they changed a lot the set list, and this concert was quite good. The singer is great.
Right.
The mood was good. The songs were like heavy and sounded great, you know, with the in that context, though. You know,
right.
You know, opening for Metallica.
I'd imagine they're a fairly popular band over there. If they, you know, if they replaced a band for these shows, and I think I heard Hamburg as well, and that they're not the opener.
Yes.
They were direct support. So I had never heard this band before, even heard of them. But it seems like they're pretty popular if they're getting thrown on the direct support slot.
I think they are quite popular in Europe.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they always do like big European tours. They went to Portugal, to Lisbon with Apocalypse a few months ago.
Cool.
That was like a European tour. And I think they are quite popular.
Yeah.
In Europe. Yeah.
How was the crowd's reaction to them?
Normal, you know. At least I didn't saw any super excited fans.
Right.
On the first day.
I guess on a tour this big, I mean, I can only equate it to when I saw Metallica on the World Wired tour, you know, when it was Avenged Sevenfold and I think Volbeat opening up. And those both those bands are good bands. You know, I've never really gotten super into them, but I remember getting to the show just thinking like, and it's nothing personal and no offense to any of those band members or what they do, but it was like, I'm here to see Metallica, straight up. So I can imagine it's a tough thing if you're in a band opening, you know, opening for Metallica.
Tough spot, you know, opening for Metallica or Maiden.
Unless you're almost that big, you know, like when they did the Big Four shows, obviously that was way more exciting because it was the first time it had happened with all four of those bands. And so, of course, the crowd's going to go crazy for all the bands, right? But yeah, a tour like this, everyone's just like, for the most part, like, all right, let's just see Metallica.
For example, the first time I saw Metallica in Lisbon was in 1999, a festival.
Right.
Merciful Fate were scheduled to play, but they canceled for some reason. I think they canceled the tour a few days before the rest of the tour.
Right.
And they replaced it with a Portuguese band that, to me, sounds a lot like, I mean, fits very well with the Metallic audience.
Yeah.
So it was like a really good fit. And basically, I've become a fan of that band on that show. But I think it's not very common to have this.
Yeah.
This thing, you know, but this was basically, if you like Metallic, you would like this band, you know, so it worked very well.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I think if I were at both of these shows, I mean, I would have loved night two seeing Mammoth because I think, I think Wolf Van Halen, man, is such a talent. I mean, obviously he's a Van Halen, you know.
Yeah.
But his music's really good too. Like his last record was so awesome, and he's such a talented dude. Plays every instrument on the record, you know.
The band is really good, you know.
Yeah. We'll get to their set in a second here. Let's maybe run through night one set list here. I'll kind of read through the set list, and you tell me if there's any, if you got any highlights from that night. So the set list was Bells, Ride the Lightning, Holier Than Thou, I Disappear, Lux Aeterna, Screaming Suicide, Fade to Black, Sleepwalk My Life Away, Orion, Nothing Else Matters, Sabbath True, Day That Never Comes, Black and Fuel, Seek and Destroy, and Master of Puppets. A lot of cool stuff in there for sure. What were some highlights for you?
I disappear. I really enjoyed the song, you know.
Yeah.
I had seen it live on the 40th anniversary shows.
Right.
They played there, and I really enjoyed I preferred the live version.
Yeah.
Than the studio version. I think it was like a really nice surprise for me.
That was when I saw the set list get posted, I was like, oh, I disappear. That's cool. It's the tour debut, but I mean, this was only show number 3, so.
Yeah.
But it's cool they're pulling stuff out like that, you know, that.
Yeah.
Even though it's you know, they haven't played it in a while, but it's little things like that. It's like, oh, okay, like they're.
Yeah, on Amsterdam for me was Until It Sleeps, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, really nice surprise. You
know? Yeah, I mean, that and King Nothing for sure. I know they did King Nothing on night 2 here, yeah. But.
Yes.
Yeah, songs like I Disappear. I mean, I love that they're. I know the first 2 shows they open with the instrumentals, which I thought. I don't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I was expecting.
Yeah, I thought every show they're doing this right.
And now they're always playing the intros, you know, to the songs. Especially when Lars switches kids, you know.
Yeah.
And the intro was like, "Oh, what is this?" And I was expecting like "To Live Is to Die" or something, another instrumental. Yeah. But then the bell started ringing on the intro. I was like, "Oh, it must be for whom?" But I was still in the mic beat. The right. Intros are a bit confusing, you know. It's like sometimes it seems like it's a different song, but then you're starting a riff that sounds similar.
What a cool thing to have, you know, them open with bells too. Like, I mean, I can imagine, like you said, hearing the big bell chime at the beginning was probably so exciting. Here's one thing that I'm curious about. So Lars obviously has 4 drum kits around the stage that raise up and lower, you know, obviously, because you can't see all 4 at the same time, but it's the same yellow drum kit for the tour. So in between songs, like you mentioned, like when Lars is switching kits, you know, between whatever songs, does he jump off the kit and head the other way, or does he lower down below the stage with the drum kit?
No. Basically, I think I haven't been on a spot where Lars normally stays between. I mean, normally when he sees the kids, he goes to the other third part. But basically, between the front row and the stage, there's like a area big enough, you know, for all the roadies are going through there. And normally, James, for example, stays there always. The Rob also. On one of the Amsterdam shows, I was right in front where Rob was.
Yeah.
Basically, Zach, his guitar tech is there, and he stays there, and Lars probably just moves around, but normally they get off the stage and they stay on that area, you know.
Yeah, so when he's switching drum kits, he's coming off the stage, or is he just walking around on the stage to the next drum kit coming up or something?
Honestly, I'm not sure, but I think he walks off stage and probably walks, but I'm not sure. Honestly, where I've been staying on the audience, I haven't seen him like walking there, but Rob and James and the other ones stay there. But he might lower and go. I mean, below the stage, I'm not sure.
Right. I've seen a lot of footage of James chilling on the side of the stage, smoking a cigar.
Yeah. I mean, there was one from the second show where he was lighting the cigars of some friends.
Oh, really?
That were also smoking cigars, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Most obviously arenas, definitely, but stadiums, even though they're. Most of them are outdoors. There's still a no smoking policy, right? There's, I would assume.
Yeah.
But of course, people are going to sneak in some weed and, you know, vapes and stuff like that. But it's interesting that like people got, you know, brought cigars in and James lightened them for them.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, man.
Pleasant.
So yeah, what are some other highlights for you in night 1 set list?
Orion, obviously.
Of course.
Of the new songs. I mean, I think they all sound good live.
Yeah.
But from the first night, Lux Eterna and Screaming Suicide.
Yeah.
Were my favorites. And then, I mean, you can't go wrong with Black and Master, you know.
Oh, of course. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But I mean, this is the problem. If you ask me for the highlights, I'd probably tell you half of the set list, you know.
So, right. Exactly.
It's difficult to pick just a few ones. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but probably those were like the top moments.
Yeah. Were there any songs in night 1 that it was the first time you were seeing them live? Like, had you seen Orion before?
Yes.
Or I Disappear? You've just seen them all.
Disappear probably is the one that I've seen them play only once.
Okay. Yeah. And then everything else you've seen?
Yeah.
I would think after 26 shows?
Yeah, 26, 27.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few in here. I mean, I haven't seen Holier Than Thou, I Disappear. Obviously, I haven't seen any of the new ones yet. Orion is like, Orion definitely tops my list of songs I want to see live. Yeah. That's my favorite instrumental by them. Yeah, the rest of the back half of the set, I've seen all those, because those are, you know, especially the, you know, the first time I saw them was on the World Magnetic Tour, so I saw a lot of those songs live, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. And kind of a, looking back, kind of a treat, because, you know, they don't, until now, I mean, they're, you know, night two, they did Cyanide, so they are thrown in some Death Magnetic Love, which is nice.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
That's a, you know, that record's amazing. All right, so night two, we mentioned earlier, Mammoth opened and Architects. What did you think of their sets?
I really enjoyed Mammoth. You know, it was a bit that the opening bands normally, they play only one part of the stage, you know.
Right.
Especially like Wolfgang, since he has one mic, not like James that has like 20 mics around the stage.
Yeah.
He was on the same spot basically the entire concert, but I could see it very well.
And, yeah,
I mean, the music sounded great, you know.
Yeah,
he's a great guitar player, the songs are good, heavy,
yeah,
good riffs, his voice is good.
Yeah, great singer.
The band is really nice, also.
Yeah, and I'm imagining at these shows too, because the stage is so big and the opening bands don't move really, I'm imagining they have both bands set up at the same time, right?
Yes, yeah, normally one band plays on one side of the stage and the other on the other side, but I mean, normally the members of the band move around, you know.
Yeah.
Things that Wolfgang like is the main yeah. member of the band, but he normally stays on the same spot, you know.
Yeah, he can't drift too far from the mic.
Yeah, and he also has the amps there, you know. He's not playing with the in-ears. Probably he's using in-ears, but he has the amps there. So
yeah.
He was basically on the same spot for the whole concert.
Yeah, that's cool. And what about Architects? Had you heard them before?
I had seen him on the Amsterdam show.
That's true, yeah.
They're okay, but the problem with these modern bands is like they sound very similar, you know.
Yeah.
Like you listen to five bands and some parts, the screaming and
yeah.
the detuned guitar riffs, the sound, you know, the tone of the guitars is awesome. But I mean, the concert was okay.
Yeah.
I prefer them this time because I am not sure, but I think they played on the first spot on the other concert. Yes,
yeah.
On Amsterdam, when I saw them, they were like the opening band, and Floor, the singer of Nightwish, was the second act, and she played a bit more. And
cool.
I thought this concert, when they played 1 hour, was better, you know.
Yeah, okay.
The songs they played. Before you were asking about the reaction to the opening band.
Yeah.
Basically, I was right in front of like the biggest Architects fan on the stadium.
That's cool.
Because it was a girl from the UK, from London, and she basically, she told me that she had seen them like a lot of times because they are also from England. I'm not sure if they are from London, but
yeah.
But I mean, she told me that she had seen them a lot of times, and she was like singing and banging her head like the whole concert, you know?
Yeah.
And the guys of them, I think they might have already know her from my concert, but basically, the singer went down, gave her a hug.
Oh, cool.
And after the concert, the guitar player and the bass player and the drummer, they will all talk to her. And she was like the biggest, massive Architects fan.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I can speak from experience that when you're playing a stadium show and you're the opener, you might have a couple thousand fans there.
Yeah.
You know? Or let's just say you got 1,000 fans in that room. But with the capacity of a place like that, it seems, it feels like you're playing to nobody. And the fans, you have to find the fans. Like
the fans, yeah.
It takes a little more effort. It's not like you're playing to your crowd, you know. So I'm sure because that girl was kind of up close, I'm sure all those dudes immediately spotted her. Like, okay, thank God, there's one of them down there.
yeah, but she was like super, super massive fan.
Yeah. That's cool.
So really had fun on the Architects show.
Well, so the set list for night two. Again, like before, I'll read it through, and you let me know, you know, what highlights you have, because I think there's some cool stuff in here. Opening with Creeping Death, Harvester of Sorrow, Cyanide, King Nothing, 72 Seasons, Darkness Had a Son, Sanitarium, You Must Burn, Cthulhu, Unforgiven, Rome, Moth into Flame, Battery, Whiskey in a Jar, One, and Sandman. The thing that popped out to me right away is Cyanide. Not that it's like this crazy uncommon song, you know, but a lot of people were wondering, like, are they only going to do The Day That Never Comes from Death Magnetic? So they're clearly, they're tapping into at least Cyanide. Maybe we'll get something else, who knows? But what are some highlights for you? And were there any songs here that you had not seen before?
No, I believe I had seen them. Oh, yes.
Damn, man.
Yeah. Call of Cthulhu, yeah. I've been to quite a few shows.
Yeah, you did. You're 32 for 32 on those shows.
I went to the S&M 2 and the 40th anniversary, so on those shows they played like a lot of uncommon songs. So.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the highlights, it's always difficult to choose, but I mean, King Nothing, I always love that song.
Sure.
From the new record, 72 Seasons and If Darkness Had a Son.
Love those songs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Temptation in the intro and the Temptation part really worked very well.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how was the crowd on that? Were they receptive and singing Temptation out loud?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good to know, man. I'm hoping that they maybe pull out a couple other songs from 72 Seasons. Now, I mean, they're basically already doing six of them. So, but that's always an exciting thing with the Metallica record is like, when are they going to debut this? Or, you know, Room of Mirrors. Are they going to play Inamorata? Who knows, you know? Well, time will tell, I guess.
Being like, I don't know, maybe when they start playing in the U.S., they might add some different songs, you know?
So, yeah, we'll see, man.
From the new record, but
yeah. Yeah, well, obviously, time will tell. And
I would say another highlight for me, Moth Into Flame. You know, Jim said it was like written about Amy Winehouse, and I mean that song always works really, really well live. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
And also Battery. I mean, whenever I hear Battery live, it's always
super exciting
for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I know I asked this of our, you know, the last guest I talked to about the Amsterdam shows, but so it seems like they're not really doing a proper encore, right? They're not like walking off stage and then
no they just
they just bust through it.
When they switch drum kits, you know, there's always a bit of a long intro between those, and but yeah, they don't do an encore like getting off stage and coming back. But I think it probably it's because it's not easy to remove them from the stage in the
that's true
in the stadium, you know, so but it makes sense, you know, it works well.
They're like, all right everybody, that was Whiskey in the Jar, we're done for the night, thank you, good night.
Yeah.
And then they go and then it takes them 20 minutes to get to their dressing room, 20 minutes to come back, and then they play one in Sandman 40 minutes later. That's probably a good call. But I know a lot of stadium shows, at least not with the stage setup they have, where it's like basically a big circle with a snake pit in the middle. But I know when we did some arenas with Luke Combs last year, he was playing in the round in the center, but it was just one huge stage, right? So those dudes, when it was time for the encore, would just walk down some stairs and go underneath the stage, and they could kind of hide out there until the, you know, the crowd's ready, and then they go back out or whatever. But I'm imagining that it's a lot harder. So, but I kind of like that they're not doing the proper encore thing, because I mean, listen, everyone knows when they go to a show, when the band walks off stage and they haven't played Puppets or Sandman, like they're coming back out.
They're gonna play.
And there's probably, you know, there's somebody in the crowd going, oh, is that it? You know, like there has to be someone that like maybe doesn't go to a lot of concerts. Yeah. You know,
there's always
like,
someone that.
Oh, that's weird. They didn't play Enter Sandman. Like, oh my God, dude, they're coming back.
Whoa.
I know. Mind blown. Dude, they totally want to do. They heard us cheering that we're coming back.
Yeah. there always might be someone that's like the first show and they're surprised by it. But
right.
Most fans have seen enough shows from Metallica or any other artist that understand that the encore is like a pause that they need to do and they come back.
Yeah, totally.
But I think it works well without the encore, you know.
Right. It's not like, you know, if they walked off stage, they're magically going to play like five more songs. You know, it's planned out, obviously. They read the set list before the show. And yeah, I mean, and really, what are you getting if they do an encore? You're getting them walking off stage for 3 to 5 minutes maximum, and then you come back out and play the next two songs they were gonna play anyways. It is funny how encores work, because you know back in the day, like an actual literal encore was like, I'm done with my set, we're finished, you walk off stage and the crowd won't stop cheering. It's like, well, what should we do? Let's go out and play another song. And you have to decide last minute. Like, that's a proper encore, obviously. So, you know, and I'm sure 99% of music fans know nowadays it's like encores are planned.
Yeah.
Out, you know?
Yeah.
It's just as weird.
Yeah. I mean, not many people are surprised by the encore, but.
Yeah, exactly. Well, dude, those are, I thought those were two solid sets. You know, nothing, you know, mind blowing in either of the sets. You know, I mean, as we see the next, you know, batch of shows come and go, we'll see kind of what they do, but I feel like we're kind of seeing a bit, not a huge pattern, but you know, it was cool to see Cyanide thrown in there for sure. Interesting that they
I think Blatant for me was like the biggest
yeah
surprise, you know. I wasn't like expecting it.
Right.
The list of both shows, it will be more or less predictable, but
right,
they will always throw a few surprises there. And
mm-hmm. I do like that so far they are surprising us with the openers. Like, I think it was very much assumed, like we mentioned earlier, that they were going to open with instrumentals, which I still think is a great idea. I think it's an awesome thing.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of us were hoping, like, dude, are they going to bust out Suicide and Redemption, you know, and To Live Is to Die?
Yeah.
I don't know, but obviously not. But yeah, overall, I think that, you know, they're the one thing they seem to be doing a little bit differently, and it's not like, obviously, they're keeping the most popular songs towards the end as far as Puppets and, you know, One, Sandman, stuff like that. But it seems like the first half of the, or at least the first quarter of the set, is kind of unpredictable as far as not only what they're going to open with, but just kind of the order.
Yeah, the order.
The
yeah.
order of songs, you know.
It seems a bit strange to have Bells as the opener, but it worked really well, you know. But since I was always used to be like the second or third song,
right.
seems a bit weird, you know. But it worked very well, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and they're changing it a lot, you know.
I'm curious to see at the Hamburg shows what they do. And who knows, maybe they decided, or Lars decided, whoever, that, like, hey, let's not do the same opener every night, because that's what they've done for a long time. I mean, it's usually the formula is open with the first two songs off the current record, right?
Yeah.
So it's cool to see them just really changing it up, you know, like the first night Bell's Lightning and the second night Creep into Harvester. It's like, whoa. So I like that they're kind of surprising people with that. That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I appreciate you talking to me, man. I know the time difference we had to figure out because I'm on the West Coast of the U.S.
Fine,
right
man.
Now. But, but we made it happen, and thank you for your time, Miguel, in doing this and
You're welcome. And
kind of reporting on both shows since we couldn't make an apologies to our patron that was going to do night one. We'll get to you, and we'll do another Metal Tales of a Show in the Past with you. I think their name was Z, by the way. Well, dude, keep playing guitar, keep making music.
I will.
I want to hear a record from you one day.
Okay.
You know, and again, if you ever, you know, please hit me up if you ever come through Nashville, and I'll give you some places to go check out. If I'm back in London or wherever you're going to be, we'll go shoot some photos or something.
I will.
Awesome, man.
I'm always like, when I go to concerts, I'm always shooting.
Yeah, well, that's great. Nice, man. Well, hey, great to talk to you, Miguel, and hope you have a wonderful day, man.
Thank you. You too.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.